we present My Music. A musical panel game devised by Edward J. Mason and Tony Schreiber. And here to introduce the teams is Steve Race.
Thank you. Hello, you know them by now, but let me introduce them just the same. John Amos and Frank Muir versus Ian Wallace and Dennis Norton. Let's have some opera to begin. John, can you please place this? Could you place that in an operatic setting?
Awfully chromatic, isn't it? It sounds like Monteverdi to me.
Yes, it's Monteverdi.
Is it L'Incoronazione di Poppea?
Di Poppea, yes. Mm. Most marvellous crescendo there. Yeah. Continuing my battle against the misuse of musical words, I'm always on about crescendo. Orchestrate is the one I'm talking about this time. The Times wrote that trade unions in the public sector are beginning to orchestrate acclaim. In other words, to score it for orchestral performance. And the Times drama critic wrote about a play having well-orchestrated silences. How about that? Only God and Irving Ward will know what that's supposed to mean.
On the other hand, surely the word orchestra is only cribbed from the theatre anyway.
Orchestrate?
No, I mean orchestra.
Mm. Ah, well, yes. But let's not go into that.
Very well.
No, very well. Frank, yes. This is a scene in which somebody called Melisande is being asked to let something down. I wonder what.
Oh. Ladies in operas,
yes,
usually let down either their profession or the hemline of their
getting
nightie.
Warm. You're getting warm.
Or their hair.
Ah.
Not in the sense of dancing on the tables, but in the sense of letting the hair down in order that the chap could climb up.
Well, not quite that, but she's standing in the tower, I'll give you that.
Oh, is she?
Yes.
Lady of Shalott, like.
Melisande is.
I've seen Pelléas's try it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, try to climb up it.
Oh,
yes. Yes, that's right.
Have
you really?
Pelléas? Yes.
Pelléas, the name of the chap.
Ah,
no, not
see.
A thing. It's a fella. He wants her to let down her golden hair so that he can caress it, and that is
in
fact
Noel Coward's phrase, that's piling Pelléas on Melisande.
Right. Ian, over to you. Ian, for some more opera. Who is being talked about and who is doing the talking? Recognize?
Yes, somebody who everybody, in fact, on the panel has met and knows in a different sort of television program. It's Sesto Bruscantini, unmistakable. And he is about to tell Prince Charming, or Ramiro in the opera Cinderella, something about a couple of girls called Clorinda and Thisbe, who are, in fact, the ugly sisters.
Precisely.
But usually played, and certainly in that performance, played by two very, very pretty girls who were supposed to be ugly of heart.
Ah, yes. La Cenerentola. And yes, Dennis, you did meet Sesto Bruscantini.
Yes, I know.
Oh, you do?
Yes. I know, Frank and I were having a mouthed colloquy about it, and we worked it out.
That's right. It's your turn, Dennis. Not quite opera, more a sort of a musical. Someone has set to music, of all things, the Oxford and Cambridge boat race. Question for you is, who is the narrator?
Neck and neck, blade to blade, bow to bow, record made, only 50 yards to go.
Very convincing, isn't it?
It is, isn't it? She doesn't usually play parts like that. No. I'm only trying to put you off.
It's actually the silken tones of your millionaire of melody, John Amis.
Yes, it was. It was John Amis in Thames Pageant by Panoufnik.
What was rather funny was that it's up to the narrator to say Oxford or Cambridge at the end.
Jews.
Yes. I kept on saying Cambridge or Oxford, you know. And little chaps, it's a youth orchestra and a school choir, and it kept on coming up and offering me packets of wine gum.
You will say Cambridge, sir, won't you?
How about a bonus mark for anyone who can tell me when the first Oxford and Cambridge boat race took place? Which year?
1829.
Thank you, you're right.
You may choose anything you like from the top shelf.
Talk about voice from the rear. It's absolutely right. Do you, sir, know which day of which month?
Right now.
No. Pushing it a bit too hard. The 10th of June in 1829 was the date. Right, let's move on to another round and a technicality or two. John, what will you find in Opus 55 as well as in Opus 35 and in Opus 43?
Variations.
Well, variations is a pretty general thing. I wouldn't say that Opus 55 was particularly variations.
Well, you know, I've got to think a few seconds more, haven't I?
Yeah, yes. Mm.
You find a tune that goes dum, bum, 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 ba da 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 dum.
Answer. Not
I think
in all.
He's going to argue it out, you know.
I wouldn't have said in all three. Would you find that tune?
Oh, I think you.
I'll tell you
but
what
you
tune.
You might not find it in the Prometheus ballet music, uh-huh. But you would find it in the Eroica Variations.
Yes.
And you would find it in the Eroica Symphony.
Yes, but you wouldn't find it in Prometheus.
Sometimes announced as the Erotica Symphony, but quite.
In Prometheus and the Variations and Fugue on a Theme from Prometheus, and in the Eroica,
right.
You would find. I have a mark, have you?
Yes.
Right. Frank, written over a string passage, one sometimes sees the letters trem, T-R-E-M. What is one supposed to do on receiving that instruction?
Tremble.
Yes, in a manner of speaking.
I presume it's tremolo.
Yes, or tremolando. What would you do if you were playing a fiddle and it said trem, what would you do with your bow? Think before you answer.
I caused my left knee to shake, which would help. It's, you sort of...
It'd be better if your right knee shook, actually.
Yes, yes indeed. Right knee shook. That's right. If you stood on a loose floorboard...
You'll do a sort of...
A shake, isn't it?
No, it's not a shake. No,
it's not a shake.
No. Musically, a shake is something quite other.
Yes, absolutely.
This is a sort of trembling. No, let's not...
A shake of Araby.
Ian, I turn resolutely to you. This is one for the record books, or rather one from the record books. Many times in your life, you must have given a delighted audience an encore. How long, would you guess, is the longest recorded encore?
When you say recorded, do you mean recorded. On record?
No, I mean recorded in books.
In books.
In the record.
Yes, in the record books. Yeah. Longest recorded encore.
I really wouldn't like
of an opera?
Wouldn't like to hazard a guess on that. The only sort of thing about encores I can recall is when the famous Russian bass Shalyapin went to the Scala Milan to sing The Barber of Seville with Toscanini. And normally, Shaliapin took his own conductor with him, because it was better that his own conductor could follow him through most things, which was not always easy. And Toscanini was conducting this performance and had said, "No encore. We do not do the encore at the Scala Milano." He said, "Very bad taste to do the encore." Well, Shaliapin always did an encore of his big aria in The Barber of Seville, playing the part of Don Basilio. So he sings the aria. He'd agreed. He said, "Yes, no encore." So he agreed. And he sings this aria to old Dr. Bartolo. And when he'd finished it, and he'd learnt this in Italian, he turned and spoke to Bartolo after the tremendous applause, and he said, "I do not think you have understood what I said, so I will tell it to you all again." And so Toscanini just...
Oh, that's worth a mark.
I'm afraid... Oh,
that's
thank
a
you,
worth, but... a worth a mark to any chairman.
What's just, the answer?
Well, the answer's rather interesting. The longest encore recorded was the entire opera. Cimarosa's Il Matrimonio Segreto, at its premiere in 1792, was repeated at the request of the Emperor Leopold II. Caruso once had to repeat La Donna e Mobile 5 times in Rio, that was in the year 1903, and a whole scene of Otello was encored at Florence in 1951.
I went to a concert once conducted by Pierre Monteux when he was about 82, I think, and he conducted a program of Toten Verklärungen of Strauss, Mozart Piano Concerto Verklärte Nacht of Schoenberg. I went to see him afterwards, and I said, "Aren't you tired, maître, after conducting all that German music?" He said, "No, not at all. I was ready with an encore, but these boys in the LSU were too tired." So I said, "What was the encore?" He said, "Seventh Symphony of Bruckner."
Oh, lovely man. Still on technicalities, Dennis, you don't, I think, we can't really know what ostinato means in music, but you might be able to work it out. Ostinato. From its root, perhaps, you can get an idea of what it is.
Ostinato. It's either ostentatious or obstinate.
Yes, it is. Either ostentatious or obstinate.
It could be sing... Yes. I'm trying to think, what would you sing obstinate? Oh, I know what you'd sing. "I won't dance. Why should I?" You think of all the obstinate songs. Anything you can do, I can do better.
Yes. Well, yeah, that would be
yes, ostinato.
No, John, no.
Yeah.
From ossa, a bone. Obstinate, persistent. Basso ostinato is a ground bass, a figure that keeps being repeated over and over again with different things over the top. Can I give you an example?
An obstinate basso, yes.
Can I give you, for instance? Yes, for instance. And then again, over which you could have... And so on, with always that going on. Time. And
thank you, Steve.
Basso ostinato. Most welcome. So we come to what might be called the BDB round. 4 pieces of music that start with the notes. BDB. Like that. Well, you can guess if you like, but John, for you, 4 notes. Right? Yes, the title.
I think it is The Blues of Basin Street.
No, it's the wrong
blues. Oh, I hate to see St. Louis.
St. Louis blues, all right, fair enough. Frank, 4 notes for you, but the 4th one's slightly different this time.
Clunny and Bye.
All right, then. Bonnie and Clyde, yeah. Ian, just 3 notes for you, but the 3rd one is sustained. Yes, Frank's singing it to you. Yes.
Still don't know what it's called.
Well, I think Dennis can help you.
I can't. It's gone. It's Frenchy.
Yes.
You've
dropped a... What is it? You've dropped a mark, I think. It's
Symphony.
Symphony, yes. I don't think you really got it in time. Dennis, I can think of 2 possible answers in your case. I wonder which of them will strike you. Here we go. That's the 3rd one.
After tonight, you played the game of only pretending.
Yeah, that'll do, actually. I was thinking of...
smoke rings.
Or...
it all depends on you. Yes.
Yes, either
was
way.
Was the other one right?
Certainly. I think it was. I think it was.
Be, I want to be happy.
Well, yes. Yes, that would. Yes, that would have done too. Yes, it's another one. Anyway, let's move on. Here's some ferocious music. John, simple question. What is it?
I think it's by Messiaen.
Yes.
And I think it's the Quartet for the End of Time. That's and I remember when I heard it first, it went on so long, I thought it was going to play out time. Yes. But it's a rather beautiful piece.
I played you a bit out of the middle. This is actually how it starts. I think is very, very nice. Frank, listening to the start of the second movement, if you can tell us, perhaps without help from John, what the four instruments in the quartet are.
We heard a piano.
Yes.
Followed by a clarinet.
Yes.
Followed by a violin.
Yes.
And a deeper stringed instrument than the violin.
With an apostrophe before it, I should think.
Or cello.
Yes, thank you. Right. Piano, clarinet, violin, cello. Very good. Ian, Quartet for the End of Time. Talking of the end of time.
Till the end of time. Long as stars are in the blue. Long as there's a spring of bird to sing, I'll go on loving you.
Ian, Perry Como there. Where did that tune originate, Ian?
Well, it's... I'm terribly bad on names and numbers, but it's a Chopin piano piece,
yes,
that much I know.
That's right. Good enough. The A-flat Polonaise. Uh-huh. Yes. The first four notes, Dennis, of that tune... are the same as the first four notes of this tune.
I left my heart in San Francisco, high on a hill. It calls to me.
And that's Andy Williams.
Andy Williams
makes a change, and a very pleasant change too, doesn't it? Dennis, who wrote that terrific song?
I haven't the faintest idea. It's
That's the terrible thing. Nobody has, or very few people have. It's credited to D. Cross and G. Corey.
Really?
No more. A round of questions about musical people. John, who composed Belshazzar's Feast, Opus 51, and Pelléas and Mélisande, Opus 46? Slight trap awaits you.
Sibelius.
Yes. Not Walton, who wrote Belshazzar's Feast, or Debussy, who wrote Pelléas and Mélisande. Mm. Absolutely. Frank, after visiting a concert, someone wrote, this was in 1890, to know whether you are enjoying a piece of music or not, you must see whether you find yourself looking at the advertisement for Pears soap at the end of the programme. Nice. The same man also wrote, I love this, life is one long process of getting tired. Any idea who he was?
Well, the chap who wrote the second one was Samuel Butler the second.
That's him. Both. Yes. Samuel Butler wrote both those remarks. Good for you. Ian, Lee Hunt wrote of somebody as dreary and gaunt, hanging his pallid face twixt his dark flowing locks. Who was that?
Dreary and gaunt, pallid face. Well, John Lennon.
Do you want a clue?
Yes.
Well, a verbal one or a musical one?
Well, take your choice, Steve. I don't mind. I'll have both, actually.
I'll give you a...
I'll have two. They're rather small.
I'll give you one on the piano.
Yes.
Right.
Oh, yes. Paganini,
it was, yes. Very capricious chap. Yes, Paganini.
Oh, resign.
Order. Dennis, much more up to date. Two familiar names in film musicals. What were the respective functions of two names I'm always seeing on old movies on television? Douglas Shearer and Cedric Gibbons. What did they
do? Douglas Shearer was Norma Shearer's brother.
Yeah. That wasn't what he did. That's what he was.
No, that's what he was. But he also did what he did on merit. It was the time when he first functioned, what they used to call the son-in-law also rises. You know, yes. It was nepotism time. But he was the first man who was a sound editor, and he was the first man to pre-record the music and have the dancers and the cast perform to playback rather than repeating the number every time. And then he stayed with MGM all the time. Cedric Gibbons was the man who gave all MGM films that sort of high-key look of design, that very glossy. He also designed the Oscar, I think. Wasn't that Cedric Gibbons?
Anyway, you're right. Recording supervisor for MGM and art director. And whatever two names are not there on the credits for MGM musicals, theirs always are, aren't they?
Well, yes.
Over a long period, too.
Yeah.
This is when I turn to the piano for four final songs. May I, first of all, record my thanks to Dennis Parsons, who sent me a quotation from a parish magazine, which reads, "Our thanks are due to the vicar's daughter, who laboured the whole evening at the piano, which, as usual, fell upon her." Charming, isn't it? Thank you very much, Dennis. As usual, it's fallen upon me to accompany. First, John, Indian Love Call. When I'm calling you, who?
This is from the telephone.
From the telephone?
You want to bet? Listen to the words.
Right.
When I'm calling you, answer to, that means I offer my love to you, to be your own. If you refuse me, then I'll be blue and waiting all alone. But if when you hear my love call ringing clear, and I hear your answer thrown, oh, so dear, then I will know our love will come true. You'll belong to me, I'll belong to you.
He sings whilst drinking a glass of water.
The thing is, sometimes when I come to the penultimate note, Dennis tries to encourage me to go up. So I thought I'd fool him that time.
Bit of the old tremolo, though.
That's right. Frank, Henry VIII, a champion song for you.
Right.
Not too fast.
Right.
I'm insecure on the wordage. I'm Henry VIII, I am. Henry VIII, I am, I am. I got married to the widow next door. She's been married seven times before. And everyone was an Henry. She wouldn't have a Willie or a Sam. I'm the eighth old man called Henry. Henry the eighth I am.
Dennis, your song Landseer's Lions feature in this I Live in Trafalgar Square.
Oh, can I borrow your voice?
I live in Trafalgar Square with four lions to guard me. Fountains and statues all over the place, and the Metropolitan pole staring me right in the face. I'll owe it's a trifle drafty, but I looks at it this way, you see. If it's good enough for Nelson, then it's quite good enough for me.
Right.
I was going to try and encourage him to go up at the end. I think his voice, like Frank and
I. I think you may go up at the end of yours. Love is a many splendid thing, oh, yeah. Of course, for a many splendid singer like Ian. Key, yes, right.
Love is a many splendid thing. It's the April rose that only grows in the early spring. It is nature's way of giving a reason to be living. The golden crown that makes a man a king. Once on a high and windy hill, in the morning mist, two lovers kissed, and the world was still. Then your fingers touched my silent heart and taught it how to sing. Yes, true love's a many splendid things.
You may well say core, yes. After that, it's an anticlimax to refer to anything as mundane as a score, but we have one just the same, a victory this week for John Amis and Frank Muir. Goodbye.
Taking part in My Music were John Amis, Frank Muir, Ian Wallace and Dennis North. The chairman was Steve Race. The questions were compiled by Steve Race and the program was produced by Tony Schreiner.